everybody, and welcome to episode 36 of the Ron and Brian podcast. I am Ron, as always, joined by three-time Hugo Award finalist Brian. Brian, how you doing tonight?
Well, having a little trouble breathing. Having a
Can we get you a lozenge, perhaps a nasal spray?
That might not. It wouldn't be the worst of ideas. I'll give you that.
So,
what on earth are we listening to?
We are listening to a cut of all of Donald Trump's very weird breathing during his little whatever that was talk from the Oval Office last night. Someone basically cut out all the words and just left his inhaling, his snorting, his sniffling. The man's got some issues, whether it's asthma, whether it's gravy for blood. I don't know. It's a little disconcerting is what it is.
I'm finding it very unnerving having to listen to.
Maybe, I was thinking about letting this literally play through the entire episode, but I feel people would put up with it for about almost as long as we've done so far and then tune out.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
I think we'll just kind of let this this breathing fade out right here. And I'm not even going to talk about what he talked about last night because I didn't bother watching it, and I doubt whether he had anything that was even worth discussing.
Well, I think the thing that we need to realize is the fact that, well, first off, you have to kill the breathing. Just kill it. Just kill it. Is that he called for a prime time address to the people. He's been in the presidency for just under 2 years. This was the first time that he requested a prime time address to the people. This is something that past presidents have used to really stand on a podium and let their voice be heard. FDR, bad example, because he really wasn't standing much. But, Reagan did it multiple times. Clinton did it. Obama did it when we discovered where Osama bin Laden was. George Bush, he requested, to talk to the nation when we invaded Iraq and Afghanistan. I mean, just this is the moment when the president gets to act presidential. And I think what we had last night was basically Donald Trump using his platform to basically repeat things that he had already said over the past 2 weeks. I kind of got a sense that people were disappointed that there really wasn't a purpose to the address other than reiterating his call for a southern border wall.
Well, and what some people are thinking is it maybe was, an attempt to drum up campaign donations because there were texts and emails that went out prior to and after his little performance there requesting money for 2020.
Oh, really? I did not know that.
Just pandering to the base as always.
So he gives a speech and then immediately after it's, hey, can you contribute to our campaign?
Hey, can you contribute? Well, not just to the campaign. Can you contribute to helping to get the wall built? But it's really just going. It's just a campaign donation.
So there might be. Yeah. But it was saying, can you help build the wall? So this is not to be confused with the GoFundMe, where money is being raised by a right-wing nut job who I don't know whether the guy's a nut job. I just think it's bizarre that he would decide that the wall requires a GoFundMe. But who am I?
What a stupid question that is. What a stupid question.
Oh, that's one of my giving
favorite,
it to you.
That's one of my favorite sound bites. Oh, that's actually, to me, that's better than I like beer.
Is it? Yeah, I mean, it's up there. It certainly has its place. But you know what my new favorite one is?
You loved it.
Oh, and we're going to get to Kevin Spacey.
We'll get to him in a little bit.
Absolutely.
So, Brian, you are on the road this week.
I am.
Doing a little bit of traveling.
I am broadcasting from the great state of Massachusetts. I am up here for a week, and we're going to address that during the beef of the week.
All right. And due to your travel, we have given Drink of the Week a little vacation since you weren't sure what you were going to have available to you up there. But you do have a drink in hand. What are you drinking this evening?
I am enjoying a hoppy floral crisp India Pale Ale from the nice people at Harpoon with a nice Harpoon IPA.
All right. I just did a little coffee this evening. I went down to my beer fridge in the basement, fully expecting to find an ice cold bottle of Baltica. That's Baltica after you reviewed campaign polling information illegally provided to you by Paul Manafort. Relax with a Baltica. But as I forgotten, I was out of Baltica. Nothing else really seemed it was going to hit the spot. So I was like, all right, we'll just do a little peppermint bark coffee this evening.
So what you're saying is that if you cannot enjoy the hoppy yet crisp flavor of a Baltica lager, then you're just not going to drink any coffee.
I mean, it's the one to have if you're having one at all. Baltica, cold as Siberia.
Excellent. All right. I'm just going to, I don't know that we didn't speak about this, but I believe they ceased sponsoring us at the end of the Races of the Year tournament. I'm not sure.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, I don't, we're not still receiving checks from them. So I'm not sure that we need to still continue to talk about the great brewery of Baltica, number 3 lager in all of Europe, the number 2 alcohol employer in terms of Russians employed Baltica for when Michael Flynn needs to talk about some strategy meetings. Have a Baltica.
Well, in that case, if they're not throwing us any money, we'll just move on from Baltica and right into This Week in Racism.
This Week in
Racism.
And defending champ Mickey Tronson, one and done, knocked off by challenger Amber Rocco this past week, 75% to 25%. Amber received 6 votes, which ironically is equal to the number of teeth left in her mouth. Let's see who she will be going up against this week. There were certainly a number of people to consider in Cleveland, Ohio. The Cleveland Clinic fired Dr. Laura Kolab after a number of hate-filled posts regarding Jews dating back to 2011 were found online. She referred to Jews as dogs, downplayed the Holocaust, compared Israel to the Nazis, and commented that she would purposely give Jews the wrong meds. Going down to Dallas, Texas, a Muslim mother and daughter wearing hijabs were attacked by another woman outside of Dallas's Reunion Tower. The attacker yelled at them to go back to their country, even though both women were born in the U.S. The mother suffered a concussion, and Dallas police are attempting to track the attacker down. In Columbia, South Carolina, a woman was arrested for claiming she was attacked by a black man in a Walmart parking lot. Police were initially searching for a suspect based on her description, but soon noticed inconsistencies in her story. She was never attacked, nor was at the Walmart that, as she claimed, and has been charged with filing a false police report and false swearing. The Educational Testing Service and College Board are under fire for invalidating the SAT score of Florida high school student Camilla Campbell. Campbell retook the SAT because she was not happy with the score she'd initially received. Based on her improved score, the College Board flagged her score for review and then invalidated it. Campbell's family has hired an attorney to look into the review process as they feel there may be a racial component involved. Out in Long Island, teacher Andrea Bryan is suing the Comac School District for their lack of responsiveness to discrimination claims she filed against her coworkers. She claimed that when asking a lead teacher about a bag of peanuts in the English office, he responded that the food was for, quote, whites only. The same lead teacher also asked her, Andrea, can you translate slave talk for me in front of colleagues during a discussion about the play The Crucible? Also, a student that referred to her as Aunt Jemima was not removed from her class when she requested it.
That's terrible.
Yeah, it's pretty horrible.
That is Long Island, though. I got to admit. Yeah, it is true.
So you have to say, what could be worse than that? Well, we're almost there. We also looked out at Chicago, Illinois, where manager Matthew Fezzi was suspended from Poke Poke Restaurant after an incident where he threw a chair at a black customer. Fezzi was captured on video stating that he reacted that way because the store had been robbed by black people and he had gotten into fights with black people at the restaurant as well. But our main competitor this week going up against Amber Rocco, we're going to Knoxville, Tennessee. Savannah Masillo is a sorority sister at the University of Tennessee. She was captured using a racial slur, which we have a quick Snapchat video or audio of a Snapchat video here.
Sav, what do you call black people?
So that went viral pretty quickly, and she is a member of Alpha Chi Omega at University of Tennessee, which suspended her when the video first came to light and is now in the process of revoking her membership. The University of Tennessee is also looking into potential punishment for Masillo as well in regards to violations of their student code of conduct. She has since taken all of her social media platforms down. Which is probably a good thing when you're shown to be such a horrible individual.
Yeah, I think, and the worst part is that she probably took it down in fear of what comments she was going to be receiving online.
Right.
And not taking it down as a to hide her past misdeeds on social media.
No, not because she was sorry about what she did, but just to hide from the repercussions coming up.
I don't blame her.
She will be facing up against our defending champ this week, Amber Rocco. So make sure you head over to the Facebook page. We'll have voting up very shortly. Before we hop out of This Week in Racism, listener Gail posted on the Facebook page. She was asking us our thoughts about Jeremy Capel, former weatherman at WHEC-TV out of Rochester, New York, made a little slip up during a broadcast this past week.
Great. This is the way it looked out at Martin Luther King Jr. Park.
Yeah, great. Oh.
So a little slip up saying Martin Luther Coon instead of King. He did offer an apology. However, he has since been fired. It's a mixed bag of people coming to his defense online. Mentioning back in 2010, ESPN anchor Mike Greenberg actually made the same slip up, but was able to retain his job. Very interesting defense, saying that because King and Junior, you know, it's very easy to make that could you, and then, you know, just come up with somehow Coon. I'm not quite sure.
Wow.
So okay. He is holding out his possibility that he may seek legal repercussions from being terminated, but we will see. Brian, thoughts on this?
I have a very hard time believing that that's a genuine mistake. I'm sure he didn't mean to say it on television or have it recorded, but I've said Martin Luther King many times. Martin Luther King. Like at no point did the word coon pop out of my mouth. Martin Luther King, Martin Luther King, Martin Luther King. That's not a mistake you make unless you are commonly referring to him using a racial epithet. So I have a hard time feeling sympathy for that guy.
I will agree with you as we come up on Martin Luther King Day, which has been a holiday. Do you get Martin Luther King Day off? Many people get Martin Luther King Day.
I believe I do get it off. I will check my employee handbook tomorrow. I I know that that's a special day for you and your wife. It's in the past. You've hosted the Ron Luther King block party.
Have I?
Yes, you were, and you invited me 2 years ago, I believe it was, where you invite all the neighbors over. You play some board games. You talk about the great civil rights movement and that took place in the 60s. You recreate the walk over the Selma Bridge. That many people remember from the movie Selma, but you and your wife cross over the little pathway above your koi pond at home, arm in arm. I mean, it's at the end of the
But you know what we don't do?
What?
We don't ever slip up and say Martin Luther Coon.
Never, never, not at all.
We say Martin Luther King.
Martin Luther King, and yes.
So, yeah, so I have to agree with you on this. Some people are thinking that this was a little harsh, but, yeah, I got to think that, like you said, that's got to be a word that's in your vernacular pretty often for it to slip up like that. So, again, we didn't consider him for racist of the week, but he could have potentially been a contender had Savannah Masillo not been such a much more horrible person and very more direct in her racism.
Yeah, she's pretty a horrible person.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Brian, are you ready to beef it out?
I'm ready to beef it out.
Ron and Brian's Beef of the Week.
Brian, what is bothering you this week? Sorry.
I'll tell you exactly what's bothering me. Okay. My beef of the week, winter.
Winter? That's winter. A pretty big beef.
I will tell you exactly what it was. It was leaving my house on Sunday late morning. We were in the mid-40s, low wind. I could handle it. Took the train up to Massachusetts. And upon exiting the train, it felt like it was about 20 degrees colder.
And that was unpleasant for you?
I am fine. I am not appreciating this temperature. It is right now where I'm located. It is 34 degrees, and I'm wearing a long sleeve shirt. I'm wearing wool pants. I'm wearing socks, and I don't want to be.
All right. I mean, just keep your fingers crossed that you don't get any snow, because that's supposed to be coming up, but I certainly understand where you're coming from. My beef is transportation and why it has not improved in like the last 50 years.
Are we talking public transportation? Are we talking
roads? I'm talking more roads, like trains and planes.
You know, not automobiles?
Not automobiles, although those haven't improved much either. But, you know, I had to drop my wife off. She had to fly out to Minnesota earlier this week. Had a, you know, like a 8 a.m. flight, which means, you know, we got to leave the house at like 5:30 so she can get down there, go with security. And I'm thinking to myself, how is it all this time has happened, all this technology has come around, and we still don't have a better way to get ourselves from point A to point B? Trains aren't really any faster than they used to be. Planes don't get us anywhere they have to be. I got to fly to Louisville in a couple of weeks, and, you know, I got to fly, I got to switch over. It just seems like if as much work was put into improving transportation as computers, porn, what have you, we'd all be better off. So that's what I'm beefing about this week.
Okay.
And the number of people that died so far in 2019, quite the number of celebrity deaths this past week. So many so that we really couldn't even decide to slow JM1. So, you know, we'll talk about a few of those that we lost this past week. Of course, we lost the captain, Daryl Dragon, the captain of Captain and Tennille.
And a lot of people do not realize just how important he was.
Why don't you tell us how important he was?
I didn't realize.
Or are you not aware?
No, I, of course. I mean, the man was. First off, we all know just how the importance that. And I thought you were going to play the song, but apparently you won't. But I mean, everybody knows him as Captain because of the work he did with Captain and Tennille in the 70s. But Daryl Dragon, I mean, he was born into a musical family. The hits that came out. You know, people, they don't remember the orchestrations he put together and Make It Good, Cuddle Up. He did so much help and keyboard work on the Beach Boys release Carl and the Passions. The man, I think, got forgotten in the 70s, but he meant a lot to me.
Well, and kind of a sad end to his life. In late 2009, he was diagnosed with familial tremors. Tennille filed from divorce from him in January 2014 after 39 years of marriage. And the captain said he apparently was unaware of it till served with the divorce papers, which apparently the divorce happened because he was so heavily drugged to control his tremors. And then, you know, he felt he was interviewed about a year or so ago and people thought he was making progress, feeling like himself again, and then dies of kidney failure. So he gave us Muskrat Love. How Deep Is Your Love? Was that one of theirs? I feel maybe that was Bee Gees.
No, How Deep Is Your Love was Bee Gees. Yes. All right.
Sorry, what's the one I'm thinking of? Oh, Love Will Keep Us Together. That's the one I'm thinking of.
Love,
and of course,
in
2007, for some reason, they had to redo I Want a Hippopotamus for Christmas. Probably the low point
right.
in the Captain and Tennille history.
I would agree with that.
We also lost Bob Einstein, depending on how old you are or what shows you watched. You knew him as Larry Middleman on Arrested Development, Marty Funkhauser in Curb Your Enthusiasm, or when I first came to know him as Super Dave Osborne, who appeared quite often on the original David Letterman show.
How can you forget Super Dave Osborne?
I felt as a young kid
that was.
He was hilarious.
I was such a fan of him. He would come on in this pseudo. It was a pseudo. Who was it? Evel Knievel.
It was
the guy
Evel Knievel type.
Of.
He was trying to parody. Yeah.
So he would come on dressed like Evel Knievel with the best. And that I think this brings back the genius of the David Letterman show. But he would come on as this fake. Daredevil, who would come on and just literally refuse to put any effort into his interview with David Letterman. So right. Dave would sit there and ask him all these questions about his career, and he would respond with nothing but one word, dismissive answers. And it just built up and built up. And the thing that I liked about the character and the way it was done was that you could see that David Letterman was truly enjoying the craziness of it.
And regardless of, you know, whatever stunt he was trying to pull off, it always usually responded in some near fatal accident.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Which I mean, and that was funny because I mean, they clearly weren't spending any money on his bits, so you could see that they had substituted a department store mannequin every single time.
Right.
Just hilarious. One of the best, I think, straight comedians in the business, because he just had that deadpan delivery and he never broke. Like, I never saw him in any incidents break, regardless of how funny the bit he was in. So it'll be a big loss there. And then
but
me,
his
this
character,
one hurt.
His,
yes.
I was going to say the character of Marty Funkhauser on Curb Your Enthusiasm was he stole scenes. With, I mean, again, deadpan delivery, but to think that, you know, he would be doing scenes with Larry David, with Jeff Garland, with these, you know, Richard Lewis, these over-the-type personalities, over-the-top personalities, and somehow he would, with his deadpan delivery, have the lines that were the ones that you remembered afterwards.
Right. There was a great clip of him from Curb with him and Jerry Seinfeld telling Seinfeld a joke, and just, you know, it's a horrible joke, but he just delivers it in such a way that, you know, it cracks you up. So definitely going to miss that guy.
And here's one. Did you know that he was Albert Brooks's brother?
I was not aware of that.
Albert Brooks, the writer, they were brothers.
I did not know that. That is some wild, wacky stuff. Did you know he got to start writing for the Smother Brothers Comedy Hour?
I did not know that.
And wrote alongside Steve Martin back in the day.
Did you know that he voiced two characters on The Life and Times of Tim?
I did not know that. A lot of interesting things we're learning here.
Absolutely.
He was also a wrestling fan. He appeared on Monday Night Raw at one point in his Super Dave Osborne character, and also about 15 years after that on TNA Impact Wrestling, again in the Super Dave Osborne character. Speaking of wrestling, we lost a great one. This one hurt. I'm not going to lie. I was a kid who watched a lot of wrestling in the 80s and the 90s. And if you watched WWF, which is what it was called back then, before the E.
Yes.
You knew Mean Gene Okerlund. He was the preeminent wrestling announcer and interviewer in the Federation in the 80s and 90s. Hulk Hogan credits a lot of his success to Gene Okerlund in the way that he could talk him up. They did a video package on Raw this past Monday night, and it got me a little bit right here, because he was very similar in the style of Bob Einstein. Just kind of, he was the straight man amongst what was at the time, because the 80s were like the big cartoon phase of wrestling between Ultimate Warrior and Randy Savage and Hulk Hogan and all that. And he was the guy that, you know, was the straight voice. And if you were a bad guy, he was gonna give you a little talking to right to your face. And so he passed away at the age of 76. Will definitely be missed.
Yes, I saw him once in person. I was at a Chiller Theater, which is a horror convention that takes place twice a year in Parsippany, New Jersey. And what started off as a horror theme has now evolved into, I say this in the most flattering terms, but B-level celebrities, C-level celebrities, and D-level celebrities, which is part of the fun of it, is the fact that you're walking through the conference rooms of a hotel and you see Barbara Eden sitting there signing autographs, and you say to yourself that you're going to go get a cup of coffee, and while you're putting some brown sugar in your coffee, you turn and Ricky the Dragon Steamboat standing right behind you, waiting for you to be done so that he can put some cream in his. And with Mean Gene Okerlund, I was pulling up to the hotel that it's held at, and Mean Gene stepped out of a Lincoln Town Car that was right in front of me, and the driver opened the trunk, took out his luggage, and Mean Gene walked into the hotel. I entered a few minutes later with my belongings. There was Mean Gene standing by himself outside of waiting for the elevator to arrive. I was thinking, obviously in hindsight, I should have, but at the time I just said, you know what, I'm not gonna say anything. I just want to leave this man alone. He's gonna.
You
be
don't want to go up to him and
weekend.
Be like, let me tell you something, Mean Gene. Just throw a little Hogan on him.
I should have, and it's bothering me right now talking about it. But I you know, you don't get those opportunities very often. And I saw him. I was like, "Hey, that's Mean Gene," to myself. But I didn't want to bother him. And the thing that I remember most about him was, and keep in mind, I think I was 7 or 8 when I started watching wrestling, was the fact that he projected such a serious tone. And he matched the sincerity that football announcers had at the time. Like he obviously studied Howard Cosell and that type of delivery, because when Mean Gene was interviewing wrestlers, whether they were good guys or bad guys, he sold it as the truth. You genuinely believe that he was concerned that the wrestler was in grave danger if, you know, they went through with this match coming up on Saturday in Madison Square Garden. And you watch wrestling now, and it's so over the top in terms of production value. And here was somebody who, you know, there was no fireworks, there were almost no graphics, and yet he was able to sell this as a genuine story and genuine product. If it weren't from him, I don't know that I would have fallen into wrestling.
And he also formed one of the great broadcasting teams of all time with Bobby the Brain Heenan. I mean, those guys just played off of each other, incredibly entertaining.
Yes.
again, I don't know that I necessarily would have watched as much had it not been for those guys. So he was a bit of a badass, survived 3 kidney transplants in his life, and had suffered a fall towards the end of his life, which caused his health to deteriorate. He was a member of the WWE Hall of Fame, getting inducted in 2006, and also was a 2-time Slammy Award winner for Best Commentator and sharing the award for Best Head with Bam Bam Bigelow in 1987. That takes me back a ways. Bam Bam Bigelow also.
I was going to say he also. Yes, but he shared. What was that last award he won?
The Best Head.
Yes, that he shares that with Sharon Epstein, who I went to high school with.
Well, all right. We'll have to get Sharon on the podcast one of these days to get some more information on that. So anyway, rest in peace, Mean Gene, Bob, and Captain. We will miss you all. Moving on, the one thing that Brian wishes would die but can't seem to die just yet is the movie Bird Box. Still a lot of people talking about it, a lot of people watching it, and now doing the Bird Box Challenge, where people are attempting to do things in their daily life with a blindfold on. Have you tried any of that yet, Brian?
I refuse to, and I genuinely do not believe that this is a genuine internet craze. I believe this is something Netflix is doing its best to manufacture to keep the movie in the zeitgeist.
Because so you think that all these videos that are popping up of people, and some of them are doing very basic things. They're trying to cook blindfolded. They're trying to, like, do their hair, do their makeup. But then you have people that are going over the top and, like, trying to run across the street blindfolded, drive their car blindfolded. And Netflix did put a message out on their social media accounts telling people not to be stupid and not to do the Bird Box Challenge. But you feel this is a little reverse psychology on their part?
No, I think that it's, I think it's a marketing attempt to create an internet craze. I believe that there are genuinely people out there doing it. I don't believe that it wasn't like the ice box challenge. What was the ice water challenge?
Oh, the ice water challenge. Yep.
Yet that was an organic phenomenon that happened. This, I think, is completely contrived by Netflix as guerrilla marketing. And I have, to me, it's probably one of the most dangerous internet crazes that's going on. I mean, to think of blindfolding yourself. I can't think of there's anything more silly and dangerous than covering your eyes and trying to go about life. I mean, prove me wrong.
Have you heard of the No Lackin' Challenge?
Is that a game that is played by Ivy League Chads who open up their wallets at the moment of no lacking to make sure that everybody has a condom in case
you would be incorrect
romantic
in that,
activity
in that guess?
No.
Okay. So apparently the no lacking challenge involves brandishing a gun on camera at someone in hopes of getting that person to pull out a weapon of their own, because you don't want to be lacking and not carrying a weapon during the day.
All right,
sure how this gets to be a challenge, but
hold on, to run this by me again. So I take my phone, I turn the video on.
Right.
I then take out
it upright, not sideways, because you want the good video.
So then what I do is I pull out my gun.
Right.
And say out loud, no lacking.
Well, yeah, I don't think you have to say it. I think is, like, let's say you're walking up to me, you got your camera on, your video on, and you pull your gun out and you point it at me in the hopes that, you know, I will pull out a weapon of my own and point it back at you.
Okay, well, that sense, doesn't right? sound... Well, what's dangerous about this?
So what's dangerous is when the gun accidentally goes off, which recently happened down in Houston. Christian Estes Johnson, 19, was fatally shot by his friend, 18-year-old Muhammad Alajil. Apparently, Muhammad's gun accidentally fired off a single shot, struck Estes Johnson in the head, and killed him. When captured by police later on, he said he was defending himself after a fight broke out. However, he later confessed to playing this no lackin' challenge. So that is apparently a thing that kids are doing these days.
So was it the first kid that got shot, or was it the second kid?
I don't know that it's been identified as to who started the challenge, but clearly Estes Johnson lost the challenge by catching a bullet in the head. Apparently, there have been at least two shootings caused by people playing the No Lacking Challenge over the past year on top of this one. Police spokesperson Lewis Brownlee said, "You could very well face criminal charges for participating in something so dumb just by the fact that if you point a firearm at someone, you have committed aggravated assault." So it doesn't matter if your gun goes off or if you, it's very true. Just pointing a gun at someone is considered aggravated assault in a number of states.
That's aggravated assault? I had no idea. I mean, obviously I've never pulled a gun on anyone, so I wouldn't realize that was a crime, but now I know that.
So you would lose no lacking challenge if anyone were to confront you.
I can guarantee you I will lose the no lacking challenge.
Remember when challenges were simple? And
you know what? You can take away my NRA card.
Like, I remember the cinnamon challenge where you would, try and eat a spoonful of cinnamon. Like you said, the ice bucket challenge was fairly simple. And now we've moved up to eating Tide Pods and pulling out weapons at each other. So I guess that's just selection at play.
At one point, planking was the thing to do.
Planking, you are correct. Planking challenge was a big one.
It was just to lay horizontal in the most bizarre location you can think of.
Did we do stupid stuff like this when we were kids? Like, I don't remember anything that dumb that we would try to do.
Between you and I think we spent more time drinking beers than trying to create internet crazes that we could catch on video.
Makes sense. I mean, you like beer, right?
Love beer.
I liked beer.
I know what you don't like, though.
Winter?
You don't like listening to the president breathe. The only thing more disturbing than that?
You loved it.
Now, so, do we have any audio of him speaking that shows this breathing thing? Because I did not hear that his breathing and sniffling was an issue until tonight when we were talking about it.
Let me see if I can find anything with that. I don't recall.
I was surprised that he only spoke for 9 minutes.
That's very true.
I thought he was going to speak for a much longer time. I also thought that he was going to make some type of announcement. I thought that there was going to be I'm declaring a national emergency, or I'm going to reopen the government for 3 months, but in that period of time, the Democrats better come to an agreement with me. Like, I thought there was going to be something we had not heard before in his and it seems as if he said absolutely nothing new.
Yeah, maybe there really wasn't much there. So I'm not quite sure. I mean, again, it was really just to drum up the base, I think. Although The Daily Show did find this great piece of video of him giving a commencement speech back in 2004.
Never, ever give up. Don't give up. Don't allow it to happen. If there's a concrete wall in front of you, go through it, go over it, go around it, but get to the other side of that wall. So, never, ever. So
he may regret saying those words back in the day.
I'm surprised that nobody had played that clip previously.
Yeah, you would think that would have popped up at some point, but not as of yet.
I will say that I find that the Democrats and the opposition, if you want to call it, I do think that there has been a greater focus over the past week of reminders that as part of his announcement for the wall, it was that the Mexicans were going to pay for this.
Right.
And now he has shut down the government because he wants the U.S. people to pay for it.
I'm speaking to you because there is a growing humanitarian and security crisis at our southern border. Every day, Customs and Border Patrol agents encounter thousands of illegal immigrants trying to enter our country. We are out of space to hold them, and we have no way to promptly return them back home to their country. America proudly welcomes millions of lawful immigrants who enrich our society and contribute to our nation. But all Americans are hurt by uncontrolled illegal migration. It strains public resources and drives down jobs and wages. Among those hardest hit are African Americans and Hispanic Americans.
Clearly pandering for the minority mm-hmm. vote right there. With no factual backup. Right, but he does have very deliberate breathing going on.
You hear it, but what I find amazing about this guy is that he is such a poor speaker when he's reading text. When he's going off the top of his head, there is an energy there. There's a personality there. When he's sitting there reading, you hear the boredom in the voice. I'm speaking to you today about a national crisis that's happening on our southern border. It's almost like it's a meditative tone that he's trying to lull you into sleep.
And that's why it's kind of strange that, you know, if he was going to try and do this as a way to, you know, get his base riled up, you know, you would want him speaking off the cuff because that's the kind of talk that his base likes.
Of course.
They don't like it when he's reading off a teleprompter, when he's using multisyllabic words. They just can't get into that. So, yeah, still not exactly sure why he did that. And then you probably also did not see the rebuttal from Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi that was aired after that. But they were equally undynamic. Those are two that you do not want to have to listen to for an extended period of time.
I think that the Democrats failed by putting those two people to present the rebuttal.
No question.
And I don't believe, I don't know necessarily they should have gone to one of the a freshman member of the House of Representatives or whatnot to provide that rebuttal. I think it's one of the problems that the Democrats are facing is the fact that there really are not, there's no middle ground right now in their party. There's this old tired guard that have been the same unpopular people for 20 years. And then you've got this highly energized base that lack experience.
Right. But you do have, I mean, you have people that are better, I think, public speakers, you know, whether you look at like an Elizabeth Warren or a Cory Booker or a Kamala Harris, like any of them probably could have given a more passionate response.
Had they chosen Cory Booker, I think that could have been his Spartacus moment.
It could have been. You know, we keep, you know, the question keeps being asked is 2020 going to be the year that he finally runs for president? It could have been a good jumping off point for him.
Yes, but well, we'll see.
Speaking of politicians up and coming, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, of course, she's getting a lot of headlines lately, trying to push the 70% tax, being very vocal in her.
Personally, I am a huge fan of her work. I think that she has brought a high level of energy to politics. I think she has, you know, I may not agree with her political views, But I think that she, you know, she's young. She's bringing a youthful energy to Congress. I believe that she has she's shooken the core of Congress. And personally, I think she's got some great feet.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, did you see the nude photo of AOC on Instagram this past week?
I did not. You'll have to bring me up to speed on that.
Well, unfortunately for you, it was a fake nude. It was a, oh. It was a photo of a woman's legs in a bathtub holding a vape pen. However, you can see in the reflection of the faucet that she's topless. People were trying to pass this off as Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez off of her Instagram from September of 2016. And who do you think came to her rescue on the internet?
I'm going to say Andrew Weiner.
Close. We'll get there eventually. Mm. How the Weiner ties in.
Oh, there's a wait a second. There's this is crazy. Who came to her defense?
A foot fetishist on Reddit, because that's how the world is these days. Apparently, there is something called Wiki Feet, which is a forum for people that are clearly into feet. People were looking at this this photo. There is a Reddit user, jokes_on_u, who commented on the post, "I'm a contributor to WikiFeet, and even I have never seen a second toe like that," referring to the right foot in the picture. They then linked to a known photo of Ocasio-Cortez's feet and implied that the feet in the post couldn't possibly belong to her. A journalist asked Jokes on You how they spotted the difference, who responded, "I've sucked enough toes in my life to recognize when something doesn't look right." Because we can't dorsi or plantar flex our second through fifth toes independently, I knew it wasn't a matter of the toe being bent. I thought that maybe she has some form of brachydactyly, but her WikiFeet page has clear evidence to the contrary. So it was clear to me that it wasn't her feet.
I
can't believe that I had ever would have to read that collection of sentences in my life.
Now, here's the real question. Did you at that point go to WikiFeet?
I haven't as of yet. I'm not much of a foot man, to be perfectly honest.
Well, Ron, I hate to tell you, but I think this is a time for us to make an announcement of our new sponsor.
Yes.
When you are not a breast, legs, or thigh man, but you like twinkle toes, go to wikifeet.com, because get your fill of toes from the internet. WikiFeet.
So, would you like to know who the photo actually was that was posted?
Wait a second. You're telling me that somebody posted a fake photo of AOC on the internet, and we actually have already identified who that photo is of?
Of course, because you know those feet people, they have a collection of photos that they love, and the photo as well as the feet actually belong to Sydney Leathers, who some of you out there might remember. She's the political activist and cam model who was involved in Anthony Weiner's sexting investigation back in 2016.
Now, she was not a cam model prior to her communiques with Anthony Weiner. She became a cam model afterwards, correct?
I don't know that I'm that aware of her career path or where it's taken her.
Okay, all right. I am. Okay, so the story was the fact that she was a political hangers-on and somehow crossed paths with Anthony Weiner. They started to exchange conversations. He sent her many photos. I don't believe she sent any to him in terms of inappropriate. He sent her many inappropriate photos. But the point being was the fact that after she had her 13 minutes of fame, she decided that this was a perfect opportunity for her to go into the adult film industry. I believe she had a an AIDS scare at one point because she did one movie and that person was either had recently filmed a scene with somebody that had been diagnosed with AIDS, or is the person she filmed with had been diagnosed since their scene. So she fell off the public radar, only now to be brought back in the AOC WikiFeet scandal of 2019.
And as she has since stated, you know, that's why when people request photos of her feet now, she charges for them, because clearly her feet are quite popular.
It's probably not.
It's a great time we live in right now. Such a great time.
I would have to, I beg to disagree on that.
No, you're not a fan of her feet?
Not really.
All right. To each his own, I suppose.
I'm not a foot, I have never been a foot person.
All right, I'm with you there. So yeah, I'm 100% behind you. Do you feel Kevin Spacey might be a foot person?
You loved it.
Oh, he definitely did.
I mean, we know he is definitely into accosting underage boys, allegedly. So he was in Yes?
I was going to say, we know that he does have a... predilection for trying to get people drunk and then making his move.
Yes. So he was at a Nantucket courthouse this week to enter a plea of not guilty in connection with accusations that he allegedly groped an 18-year-old busboy at a bar on Nantucket Island. He had attempted to get out of appearing, but the judge struck that down, said he had to be there. So this happened, the incident was in July of 2016 at the Club Car in Nantucket. According to the criminal complaint, an 18-year-old busboy at Club Car told Spacey that he was 21 and befriended the actor after the busboy's shift ended. He changed clothes, began talking to Spacey. According to the complaint, the busboy told police that Spacey bought him a number of alcoholic drinks, bragged to him about the size of his penis, and then tried to get him to go back to the actor's house. Later, as the two stood near a piano player in the bar, Spacey reached over and began to rub the busboy's thigh, then unzipped the accuser's pants and rubbed his penis both in and out of his pants for about 3 minutes. The busboy filmed a short part of the alleged groping on Snapchat and sent the video to his girlfriend. So, a lot was going on that night. And investigators showed the busboy that video and confirmed his and Spacey's clothing that night.
All right. Well, let's see. Frank Underwood would never have done anything like that.
You loved it.
So, and the defense that they seem to be leaning towards is the fact that since the busboy didn't try to stop Kevin while he was being groped, then that, you know, should mean that maybe it wasn't as bad as he's making it out to be in the complaint. Lawyer Alan Jackson asked Trooper Gerald Donovan during the this preliminary hearing, instead of walking away or moving away or moving back or grabbing the wrist or slapping the hand, he indicated to you that during that three-minute time period that he was texting and Snapchatting, to which Donovan responded, that's correct. So kind of interesting to be texting and taking a Snapchat, but again, you know, you can't really, I think, judge what a victim does when they might feel like they're in a powerless situation.
Listen, my, you know, I know you and I disagree on this, but my approach, you know, especially, you know, during, when you're at a bar, is that if somebody's on their phone, texting and Snapchatting, I mean, they're clearly asking for it.
I guess maybe we agree to disagree on that.
All now, right. Again, you know what? I think this may be one of those. It's cold outside where we disagree, and then I'm going to do a little bit more research, and next week issue an apology for having such a poor understanding of social mores.
So I'm going to jot that down on the agenda for episode 37. Brian's apology about the Kevin Spacey story. Now, again, this wasn't
amazing.
This wasn't the first accusation levied against Kevin Spacey. Back in November 2017, Actor Anthony Rapp accused Spacey of making a sexual advance towards him in 1986 when he was 14 and Spacey was 26. And in a Twitter statement at that point, Spacey said he did not remember the incident but offered the apology and also came out as a gay man at that point, which a lot of people were extremely critical of because, you know, they felt like he was trying to draw attention away from his alleged misdeeds by coming out as a gay man. So we will continue to follow this case as it moves along. I don't think they have, I think they have set a follow-up court date for March 6th. So we have a couple months to wait on this, but we'll keep an eye on it and see what other weird things Kevin Spacey can do in the coming weeks.
You love it.
All righty.
Who's creepier in your mind, Kevin Spacey or Ryan Seacrest?
Cut the shit.
Oh, I'm going to say Ryan Seacrest, hands down.
Oh, really? You're still mad at Ryan Seacrest. I'm sorry to hear that.
Yes.
All right. Well, I think anything else on our agenda here tonight, Brian?
Absolutely. I was hoping that we could have a moment of silence.
Oh, hold on. Okay, for who?
For Zion Gastelum, a 2-year-old kid from Yuma, Arizona.
And what happened to Zion?
Well, Zion went to, his parents took him to the dentist on December 16th, and he needed crowns for a severe case of cavities, which I find a little odd for a 2-year-old, but let's not judge the parents. However, right. Zion was placed under anesthesia, and apparently the procedure went well, lasting 35 minutes, and he became unresponsive after the procedure, was rushed to the hospital, and died 4 days later. And what we later on found out was the fact that the oxygen tank that he was hooked up to was empty, and that the alarm that was set on the machine to check his heart rate and pulse, I meant to say, had been shut off by staff. Oof. Can you imagine taking your 2-year-old to the dentist and having him become unresponsive and die?
Yeah, that's pretty horrible. I mean, he had apparently excessive cavities, which is kind of weird at 2 years old, but apparently had 9 of his baby teeth worked on, including root canals and crowns on 6 of them. I mean, I've had one crown done, and that was just like horrendous to do at one sitting. I can't believe they tried to do all of this at one shot. Well, that is a horrible story, but apparently not the first time that this chain of dental clinics called Cool Smiles has come under fire for potentially harmful practices. Looks like back in January of 2018, the U.S. Department of Justice settled a false claims lawsuit against the company, resulting in a $24 million fine.
Well, I think they're looking at another one right now.
I think you've got pretty big lawsuit coming. So
yes.
Well, that was a real up way to end the episode, Brian. Leaving on a high note.
Well, I felt like I had crossed the line with the AO with the wiki feat, and I just thought I had to make up for it.
All right. Well, we will wait your apology next week. But again, you know, until next week, make sure that you check out the Facebook page, vote on This Week in Racism. We will get back to Drink of the Week next week.
Yes, we will.
We will have a poll up to choose what we'll be drinking next week. So make sure you vote on that as well. Keep an eye on the Twitter, the Instagram. If you haven't already, subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, whatever platform you want to listen. Rate, review, pass us along to your friends. We're trying to build this into a global force, and we can only get there with your help. So, Brian, anything else for the week?
No.
All right. Safe travels home, my friend. Stay
warm.
Thank you,
sir.
And we will catch all of you.